I will be talking about end-to-end encrypted instant messaging. And I'm just wondering, who of you uses an end-to-end messenger? End-to-end encrypted. WhatsApp? Telegram? Signal? XMPP with conversations, for example? Well, quite some of them. Well, I hope that after this presentation you will never look to them with the same eyes again. Let's first talk about me. I've about 20 years of experience with creating secured messaging systems in care and healthcare. I'm also a member of the XMPP Standard Foundation, and over the past 12, 15 years, there have been four different end-to-end encryption standards within XMPP. And after four standards of those standards, I'm still not content. I'm still not happy with them. And in this presentation, I will explain why I think these are really not good and what's wrong with them. But this presentation is not the opinion of the XMPP Standard Foundation. In matter of fact, I may even start a flame war within the XMPP Standard Foundation by giving this presentation. So please tweet about it. I love flame wars. In this talk, I will focus on two things. Issues in the threat model that is behind end-to-end encryption, and technical issues with end-to-end encryption. So let's first go to first things first. I think it's good to distinguish between two levels of encryption. The first one is encrypting the connections. So your client connects to a server, and that server, that connection is encrypted, secured, but your server decrypts it, processes the messages, plain text, can read what's in there, re-encrypts it in the connection to the next hop, to the client who receives the message or another server who continues routing the messages. And the servers, of course, see the content of the messages, but they really need the routing information to send the messages to the right place. In end-to-end encryption, the messages are decrypted at the endpoint, so in the client, in your client who sends it, and in the client of the person who receives the message. On the way, on the service, the messages are not decrypted. But the servers on the way still need some kind of information to send the message to the right person. So there's still routing information. So the big argument to do this is because you don't decrypt it. You don't have the messages, plain texts at the hops in between. And that's very useful if you don't trust your server. If you think, well, maybe a secret server is reading there, or maybe it's a server that's run by Mark Zuckerberg, and I don't trust Mark very much. But you still have to trust your server with the routing information. The server still knows what message goes where. And, well, two reasons are always named why we should have the end-to-end encryption. And that's the, I call it the Edward Snowden scenario. There's some big agency listening to everything, mapping everything, just like the previous speaker mentioned nicely. And that results in quite a bit of information. And the other one is the Mark Zuckerberg scenario. Some guy who really wants to know everything because they can send you nice information and sets up a nice chat system so they can read everything. So let's zoom in on that. How does a secret service perform that attack? What does it do? Well, it's quite common scenario is I do something stupid like tweeting, I'm gonna bomb this airport. Then beep, beep, bomb, airport, keywords. And then they say, oh, this guy's interesting. And then they start doing surveillance and checking all my metadata. Who am I communicating with? Graphing all my network. So they can map if I'm a lone guy doing it on my own, or if I'm part of a network of terrorists, and they start to map out who is interesting enough, yeah, to go for a deeper investigation. And once they know that, they have two options. The first option is to start eavesdropping on all communication. The second option is to hack my devices, or to hack the devices of the people they think they are interesting. So there are two routes that the Secret Service can go. Now, the end-to-end encryption does not protect against the reconnaissance they do. The whole mapping of the network is done solely on the metadata. So end-to-end encryption doesn't help there. Well, one of the two options for them to act, namely eavesdropping, that's cut off by end-to-end encryption. But so they have to refer to hacking. But hacking is very interesting anyway, because it reveals much more information about me, very much more, and it's not that hard. Sometimes eavesdropping even may be harder than hacking. So the conclusion is, it does not really help against the Secret Services, the end-to-end encryption. Now, let's go on to the Mark Zuckerberg attack. He starts with the same point. He starts using the metadata to map my social circles. Who am I hanging out with? And then he starts to use statistics. Well, the people I hang out with, they all like to eat ice cream. Oh, that might be interesting. Maybe Winfried also likes to eat ice cream because he hangs out all the time with people who eat the ice cream. And, well, that's interesting information. We can sell advertisement based on that information. So that's how I end up as being in the list of people interested in ice cream. But what's the sole conclusion? It works solely on metadata, what he does. He doesn't need any content of the messages at all to do this. So end-to-end encryption doesn't protect at all. So I write it in very big letters. It does not, end-to-end encryption does not protect against the attacks that are usually mentioned. People usually say, well, we need end-to-end encryption because it helps against the Secret Service, because it helps against Mark Zuckerberg. And very funny, Mark Zuckerberg is saying all the time, well, we are going to improve your privacy, we're going to add encryption to our messaging. Right. Yeah, he doesn't need the content to do my privacy violations at all. He doesn't want it. And that's the next point. There are two reasons why you really want to have end-to-end encryption as server operator. The first one is, it's not nice when you're a server operator and a police officer comes and says, please hand me over all your user data. Because that's a bad story towards the user. Maybe you get caught up in all kinds of legal procedures, all kinds of stuff you don't want. So when you end-to-end encrypt, you can say to the officer, I don't have anything. So it's very nice when you're a server operator and you have end-to-end encryption. And also, and I see that quite a lot happening in healthcare, when you use, for example, a cloud like Google Cloud, because it's so scalable and cheap and easy to use, and you want to pass sensitive information there or use it for routing the messaging, well, then end-to-end encryption may be very interesting, because then you can keep Google away from your data. So it helps you to set up infrastructure on a partially untrusted infrastructure servers. So when I'm a server operator, it can be very interesting to start end-to-end encryption. So when you don't do any protection of the metadata, like the cuts and posts the previous speaker was talking about, if you don't do anything like that at all, yeah, then end-to-end encryption doesn't protect the users, doesn't protect you and me. It protects the server operators, So there's quite a bit hard conclusion. Everybody is what the reasons everybody's needing to use end-to-end encryption are not good. They're really almost a fork or a deception. Now, that was the first part on the use, this on the threat modeling behind the real ratio of end-to-end encryption. I want to dive into four more technical issues. It's about message storage and forwarding, about audit trails and archiving, about group chats and multiple devices, and about key verification. And I can already say none of these is really solved very well right now, but they may be technically solvable, and there are people working on it. So let's move on. Perfect forward secrecy. Previous speaker also mentioned it. It's a very nice system. It rotates keys quite fast. And when a key is used at both sides of the encryption, you dispose them, delete them away. And that means that when you rotate those keys, for the time that key is valid, only that window of messages can be decrypted with that key. And all these keys are signed with your master key, but not kept anywhere. So when after 1 year or 2 years or 3 years, your master key is compromised, well, they still can't decrypt the messages because those rotated keys are all deleted. And that's very nice because, yeah, it's forward secrecy. It helps you to keep your messages safe in the future, even when your master key may get compromised. But when you're in a typical messages architecture, you're not online all the time. You're sitting in an airplane, you don't have internet coverage, you don't want to be reachable maybe at some moments. So a good messaging infrastructure has a store and forward function. It keeps a message for a certain amount of time to send it when you become online. But that only works with end-to-end encryption if your key is stable. If your key gets rotated in the meanwhile, you can't decrypt your own messages. And that's a logical trade-off. So you have to compromise between functionality and nice long store and forward. Well, I'm 2 weeks doing some hike in the mountains, 2 weeks offline, but then I have to have a key that doesn't rotate in those 2 weeks to receive still my messages. But that makes it more vulnerable for attacks. So it's always a trade-off. And it's, Next issue, there are around audit trails and archiving. And it's very important to see that there are different use cases for messaging that have very different needs there. For example, when you're a human rights activist, you don't want to have any traces of your messaging anywhere and certainly not on your device. So you don't want to have any archiving, no trace. And this is perfect for forward secrecy and in-memory processing. And you can come quite an end. It's quite hard to get it really good, but you can get quite well. But in many of the use cases where I work, for example in healthcare, security, when they talk about security, they also want to have an audit trail. They want to know what happened, what went over the wire, who was messaging who, and want to check if a message really got through, or want to check if a message wasn't tampered with, or to who the message was sent. And well, there's already a bit of tension there because an audit trail and end-to-end encryption don't match because you're in fact with the audit trail creating a wiretap on your own system. So you have to think about how do we handle this. And met archiving is a bit similar. It's very nice when you can scroll back through your chat history and look at the nice link or the nice restaurant that was mentioned some days before. But it is an archive, and there is a risk of compromise there. So when you want to create an archive, do you do it on your own device or do you do it at the server? Well, to do it at your own device, two options. Or you use the perfect forward secrecy, but then you have to dispose of your message key and you can't keep the message encrypted with the same key. So you have to decrypt it and re-encrypt it specially for your archive. Then hope that your archive is strongly enough encrypted to keep it safe enough and that your key isn't compromised and whatever. So you still have a stable key there for the archive. Or you say, well, then we don't use any perfect forward secrecy and use a stable key for your end-to-end encryption. Well, that's also, again, a trade-off. Then you again run into problems. You never really get it right there. And also, if I keep an archive on my phone and I want to use it to prove that I really didn't get a notice from my lawyer, then I really need quite a lot of cryptographic signing and stuff to really make proofs like that possible. So that's hard to get around. Maybe it's possible, maybe not, but it's quite hard to get it really good. Creating an archive at a server sounds quite ridiculous, yeah? When you make an end-to-end encrypted connection, and then you use the server to wiretap it. So that only makes sense if you find a way to keep the message encrypted, branch it off the server to an entity that you do trust with your archive. But then still you need a trusted third party with your archive. And lack of trust was more or less the issue why you started with end-to-end encryption anyway. So still doesn't feel right. So creating an archive, very valid in some use cases where they also shout you need end-to-end encryption, really is quite bad idea often, or things like that. Well, next technical issue, one-to-many messages. One nice example of it are chat groups. Another one is a feature I really like about XMPP, is the possibility to use multiple devices. I've XMPP client on my phone and on my laptop, and they both are constant in sync. I see all the messages on both of them, and when I type a message on one of them, I see them on the other. But that means that more or less I'm creating a branching of the messages to multiple recipients. Multiple devices of the other person, and another device for me, or in chat group. When we try to create an end-to-end encrypted group chat, at least with XMPP, we ran immediately into two problems. The first one is everybody has to be able to decrypt the messages. Most obvious way to do that is to give everybody the same secret key so they can all decrypt the messages. But spreading a secret key around isn't a good idea. It's not really keeping it secret. Other issue you run into, certainly we have chat groups with hundreds or maybe thousands of people in there. You get a really scalability issue if you say, well, we don't use all the same key, but I encrypt it separately to everybody who needs the message. And then I send to each of them their encrypted version of the message. In that case, my phone, when I'm participating in a chat group with 1,000 people, has to send 1,000 messages and encrypt 1,000 messages to get them everywhere. Well, that would be a very good way to empty the battery of my phone and to empty my data plan. But it's not a good way to build a chat system. So can we solve this one? And the real question is, can we distribute a message to multiple keys? And can we distribute it at the server? Yeah, without the server decrypting it. And this is really a nifty, nice piece of cryptography. Here I can say, yes, we can. The Diffie-Hellman exchange allows to create a group key, to add multiple public keys to one key, and then encrypt the message with the one created key composed of all those public keys, and to decrypt it with all of the secret keys separately, so they all can all decrypt the message. It's really nifty, nice function, and even better, it's even possible to add or remove public keys from the list. So when somebody joins or leaves the chat group, or if one of my devices gets disposed of, I'm still happy. But there's one issue with this nice system. It works, but there's no reviewed and operational standard for using it yet. There are some implementations doing this, but they didn't have reviewed, they are not standardized. But there is light at the end of the tunnel here. The IETF has a draft for message level security, who is really in a nice way taking care of this. And it's heading the right way, but it's not far from finished yet. When you read it, there are still to be done in the standard for it. So the one-to-many messages, it is, check my time, yeah. It may be a solvable problem, but it's not solved right now. And when you look, for example, at WhatsApp and see a group chat, well, I think I know what happens. I know almost for sure they get decrypted at the server, sent to everybody with re-encryption, because group chats in WhatsApp don't have anything like this in there. So so there are many more examples of it, that when you try to use cases of multiple devices or group chats, that the end-to-end encryption just fails. Well, next issue is the key verification. What you really want to know for sure is that the person you encrypt the message to is really the person of the key you encrypt the message to, really belongs to the person who should read the message, and not to a secret agent who thinks, well, that's nice, I impose a Winfried and now everybody, or no, not everybody, but I can read his messages. And there are more or less four ways that are used quite often. And the first one, and you should know that one from WhatsApp too, is the leap of faith. You just get a message from somebody you don't know, and there is this message is encrypted, notification, and you just believe, hope, trust it's the right person, and it's not somebody imposing the other person. Well, that sounds very bad. It is bad, but maybe not as bad as it sounds, because there's only a small window where you can use an attack like that. And if I get a message from somebody I don't expect at the moment, there may be ways to verify it, but it's still bad. You really open quite a bit of possibilities for attackers to go there. And in matter of fact, there are some attacks against end-to-end encryption of WhatsApp known, and almost all of those attacks are about the key verification. Other one is the web of trust. Do you know PGP and the PGP signing parties? I've been on many of them and I quit with them. And for example, at those at FOSDEM, if you know that, there are really hundreds and hundreds of people checking each other's keys and passports. Well, you have 30 seconds time to check. And if there's somebody with a false passport or a secret agent with a false identity, you can't notice. And chances are real, I did sign false keys or people impersonating their keys. So it's very hard to get really the checks from those webs of trust that are good enough to say, I'm really talking to the right person. Now, trust a third party. Let the government sign all our keys. Maybe. In some cases it may help, may solve. You can use some nice privacy by design there, that the government can't know too much information, whatever. But it does feel, still doesn't feel right, because we wanted to get rid of those trusted third parties. We're just exchanging the one for the other. And my government signing my public key doesn't help to my government eavesdropping on me. So, what's left? Fabrication in person, or maybe calling, so over an independent second channel. That may work. And then I did it with people. Is this really your key fingerprint? Yeah. But it's a limited use case. It's because you already have to know that person. You already must have seen a person. And it's not scalable. You get really crazy if you are in a chat group with 100 people and you have to verify all the keys. So key verification still is a problem we're fighting with, we're dealing with. So there are some more problems with key verification. Besides, how do we do it? How do we really get it right? How do we handle changes in key? For example, in WhatsApp, you regularly get the message, the key has changed. Great. Yeah? So each time a message like that passes, it may be that somebody takes over the chat. I don't know. Should I verify again? Well, I didn't that in the first place, but and for example, how to handle multiple devices. How can I prove that both the laptop and my mobile phone belong to each other? Now, maybe I should scan a QR code or something like that. But there are really things you really have to do right and have to get done right to get a system like this safe. And that's a bit of the issue here. If you fail at the key verification, well, then you more or less fail also at your end-to-end encryption. Well, it's time to get to the conclusion. And I've been thinking quite a lot from what's really the message, what is it really about? And I had to think about the discussion among security experts about this question. It's bad encryption is better than no encryption, or bad encryption is a false sense of security. And the longer I work on standards of end-to-end encryption, the longer I see how people talk about it, what the expectations are of end-to-end encryption, the more and more I get convinced it's the last one. Bad encryption is a false sense of security. And after writing 4 standards for end-to-end encryption myself, I have to come to the conclusion end-to-end encryption creates a false sense of security. Ditch it, leave it, never ever mention it again. Well, maybe in combination with something like Custom Post or Briar, who will be presenting here tomorrow, or Switch, that are really systems designed for example, the human rights activist scenario. systems like that, they may be sensible. But the end-to-end encryption we tend to see in messaging systems right now, forget it. Useless. Full sense of security. Don't go there. So, that's it. Still have some credits. David Crit-Welland, maybe also member of the XMPP Standard Foundation. Love to discuss crypto with him. He has, in the crypto show and tell, he shows very well how the Diffie-Hellman exchange with multiple keys works, the message level securities. It is interesting stuff. Good to read if you're really into the crypto and things like that. But that's it. I was wondering, any questions, discussion?
Hello, thanks for the talk. I have an argument for end-to-end encryption. So basically that you say it's useless, but I say it's very useful if you are not targeted. If you are not, like with the Secret Service, if Secret Service is targeting you, yes. End-to-end encryption is useless, it's easy to hack you, but if you are not being targeted, and somebody is just sniffing messages like all over the place, all over the network, then it is very much useful.
My counter question is, what is the added value of end-to-end encryption above connection encryption?
I don't know.
The issue is, it has added value if you don't trust your server. But if you don't trust your server, then you're also already leaking your metadata. but that's the answer I always get when I start to, oh, metadata is different. No, it isn't. It's part of all the attack scenarios.
What do you recommend instead?
Pigeons. No, this really is a problem. In matter of fact, XMPP has quite an interesting security model because I'm running my own XMPP server at home. I trust it because I maintain it and manage it myself. It connects only encrypted to other XMPP servers, and those other XMPP servers are either XMPP servers other users trust, or XMPP servers they run themselves too. Well, that makes quite a sensible security model. There's, and that's, and you don't need end-to-end encryption to do that. And it does still need some metadata. A network observer can still count the encrypted packages between the two servers and see patterns there. So it's not perfect, but a thing like that can help. But the real point is, end-to-end encryption has no added value, or barely any added value, above connection encryption. When your connections are encrypted and you trust your server, you're more or less or pretty fine.
But if you trust one of your friends and one of those is turned by the security services, then you're stuffed. And that's the old Albanian model where one in third of the population were pushed into being informers. How do you know that, well, even that it's still the same plug top server and not a substituted one?
Well,
surely.
When your friend is plugged, you know, I neatly decrypt everything to my friend and I'm gone. So, end-to-end encryption don't help to plug humans. Time is up, I hear.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's okay.